Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Culture, Dave.
You want to culture me? What, I'm not cultured enough?
I don't think we have enough time in the day to culture you, and I don't think you want me to be the one that's doing that as well. So perhaps I was thinking about culture as it relates to persuasion.
Okay, sure. What? How can I help you?
Well, I know you've written a book on leadership, and you talk about a lot about culture. And I was thinking, since I'm creating a program to train folks in 8 or 9 countries, how culture impacts persuasion. And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Oh, that's a huge topic, Darren. We got a lot to cover with that. I guess the short answer, and folks, after this answer, you just stop. The rest of this is all just going to be blah, 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 right? The short answer is culture will have a huge impact on your ability to persuade, because culture is really a reflection of your values. And so, like everything else in leadership, if there is a disconnect between what you, your stated values, what you claim your values are, and your culture, that will undermine your integrity and then make it more difficult to persuade. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Absolutely. And also, I would think the exact same thing in sales as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Again, anytime you're presenting conflicting information, and so that's what happens. If your company culture, for example, let's go to sales for a minute, and you and I both have dealt with salespeople who the culture is close the deal. And so the behavior of salespeople will reflect that. At the same time, the salesperson is probably not telling you, listen, I'm going to say what it takes to close this deal because that's what we care about. They're going to say, this is what's good for you, because that's what they know closes the deal. And so the buyer, the warning signs go up and go, something, they can't even identify it half the time. They just go, something doesn't feel right. So I guess in our conversation and culture, that's the first thing I think people need to understand is culture is a reflection of our values. And that's personally, corporate, globally, nationally, cities, whatever organization we're in.
That makes total sense. Absolutely. And it's funny, you know, you were talking about sales. What I tell my clients is, you know, there's an old movie, ABC, Always Be Closing. A lot of people think ABC, ABC, ABC. And I think ABQ, Always Be Questioning. And that's part of the culture I instill, because we want the clients to determine for themselves why they need a product or a service.
You know, that's really good stuff. And there's 7 elements to culture. And I bring this up for a reason, right? So there's the social organization, how we interact with each other socially. Some companies, they may be very formalized. They may be very, you know, rigid. Others may be informal and lax, very flat. Zappos comes to mind, Zappos.com. They're now owned by Amazon, but you know, we're an independent company for years. Recently, I think it was 2015, they made a switch in their management system to what's called Holacracy, which is a management list. They don't have managers. And we probably don't have time in this podcast for me to go into what that means, but it significantly changed their culture, right? So that's their social organization. The second element, which is what brought this up, is language. And so in sales, we're talking about closing. And I know there's a lot of sales programs that don't refer to that stage where we gain commitment as closing, because the implication of is we're done. The door's boom, shut, right? Whereas what we really did was just open a door and create a relationship. So those sales or methodologies refer to it as commitment is right. one of the things, right? So our language is really important because it signifies what's important to us. So I love ABQ because it says the emphasis is not on closing. The emphasis is on questioning, which implies understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a prior podcast, we talked about being transformational versus transactional. Sure. If we don't understand where people are today and where they want to be, how do we help them transform, i.e. get from where they are to where they want to be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a great quote by William Glasser. He's a reality therapist. And it's, language is not insignificant. It is the main vehicle by which we communicate. The more we use it correctly, the further it will take us in the direction we want to go. So what you're talking about is being very intentional and understanding language is very important when we're looking at culture. I totally get it. And understanding their language is important. And from a sales perspective, we want my clients to understand the language that their prospects are using, which is also very important to understand all sorts of different language scenarios that are going on.
Absolutely. And again, back to your culture, your sales culture, which means we need to ask good questions.
Absolutely.
And the parallel, once again, and those our listeners who've been with us for a little while now will have heard this already, but the parallel between leadership and sales is really uncanny, because I remember when I was at the moving company, and when I got there, the gentleman's role was general manager, but he became a moving operations manager, I think was a title, because I took over inside, he handled outside. So we bifurcated the general manager roles. He spoke with a ghetto patois. So in other words, his idioms, the way he spoke was very ghetto. And that's not where I grew up. And this is not a judgment on it, other than to say, a lot of times I didn't know what he was trying to tell me.
Right.
And I frequently had to say, what does that mean?
You know, right.
Like I'd say something to him, he'd go, word. What word are you talking about?
Right.
Right. I had after a while, I understood that that was his way of signifying agreement with me.
Right.
But I didn't know that.
Right.
And so I had to learn to ask good questions. Otherwise, I would make assumptions.
Yep.
And we know what happens when you assume.
Absolutely. Well, and I was acutely aware of that when I was doing work in China and other Asian countries, just the language and the language that I use and some of the words I take for granted may not translate well over there. Because when I did trainings of 8, 9, 10 hours a day, there were no translators. So I had to speak with a different tonality, inflection, and even the word choice. So definitely very important. Language is very important. What are some of the others?
Well, so there's 7 elements. We talked about, we mentioned social organization, talked about language, religion. Mm-hmm. And so religion is our, how we justify our meaning, our existence, our meaning in life. In business, I think that is represented by our purpose. Why do we exist? And I don't mean why do we exist for ourselves. So religion is a higher power.
Right.
And so some of our listeners are probably atheists out there, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But for even if you're atheist, you're aware of religion. And for our non-atheist listeners, right? It represents a higher power, and every religion I know of, I'm not a theologist, I haven't studied every religion, but I'm certainly familiar with all the major ones. Every religion I know of, in one form or another, talks about service to something outside of yourself, other mm-hmm. people, God, Allah, whatever. Mm-hmm. As an organization, and when I say organization, since we're talking business leadership, but you know this can be as a society as well, right? Our religion is what is our greater purpose outside of ourselves. So you see that today in Western culture, there's this big emphasis towards Gaia, Mother Earth, and it's actually almost religious for people. Their fervor for protecting Mother Earth, its service to Earth,
right. So
has that religious element. Art and literature, right? So art and literature are a reflection of our values. Your office, how it's set up, that's art and literature. Your art, the architecture of right. So again, when I was at the moving company, moving's all about organization. When I got there, the bullpen area, picture like we had four or five cubicles, and then we had a bunch of massive filing cabinets with just, they were flat surfaces. We all know what happens to flat surfaces, and they get piled with stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah. And I was actually thinking of another S word, but
I know you were.
Even though we're not FCC regulated, I'd rather not offend people by saying shit, so I won't.
Thank you for not.
Yeah, and it just, we were less than effective. When we cleaned that up and reorganized, it became a reflection of who we really were. And you could just feel everything started coming together. The form of government. So what is your structure? What is your power structure look like? How are decisions made? Mm-hmm. And I'll come back to all of these and give really good examples if you're looking for.
Yeah.
Economic system. So how are people rewarded? And finally, our customs and traditions, which is probably the area as leaders, we really can have the most fun. And how do they reflect what your true values are? So those are the seven elements of culture.
And got it.
I think we need to intentionally create them to do what we need them to do.
Yes, absolutely. It's funny. I used to work at a university, and the boss was really into customs and traditions. And so even though no one wanted to engage in out-of-work activity, we got a chance to engage in out-of-work activities. And this is kind of, I think it's kind of funny. When a new person came on board, the very beginning of the year, we would always end up at the beach, right? And custom and tradition was, if we liked the new person, we would tell them, hey, when we get to the beach, do not be within 10 feet of the boss. Because you don't want to be, just trust us. And if people didn't lie, it was never part of this, but if people didn't like that person, then they wouldn't say anything. And the boss would flip off his shirt and ask for that person next to him to rub the suntan lotion on his back. Now, that would never happen today, but that's custom and tradition that you very, really, truly want to know about in that community. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say, and I think that's a reflection. When you think about what that says culturally, it's a reflection of what that boss's values were. And I would guess that boss saw team members as subordinates.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
I would guess that organization, you said this was where were you again?
A university.
A university. I bet the university's social organization was very hierarchical, highly structured.
Yes.
So all of this is a reflection of that culture. Absolutely. So even the customs and traditions mirror the rest of it.
Absolutely.
You know, whereas you take a look at the customs and traditions in the military, you would think would always be very hierarchical. And they are to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But in aviation, naval aviation, and let's take that because it's a very different culture, naval aviation, than the Air Force. People always equate the two, and they're extremely different. We are very irreverent. Now, it's not maverick irreverent like you see in Top Gun. He never would have made it if that was real life because he was unprofessional,
right?
Which was part of our culture, was a professionalism. However, right. We are a bit irreverent. And so some of the traditions we had was, for example, what we call forecastle follies. On board ship, we would periodically gather in the forecastle, which is the forward compartment of the ship. It's very clean. It's where the anchor chains are. And the junior officers would put on skits that would – frequently they would lampoon a senior officer.
Mm-hmm.
So this was – it was an interesting tradition because it was structured. So the rules were anything went. The rules were senior officers couldn't retaliate or take umbrage on anything. So as a structured way of giving up the chain feedback, because a really good senior officer would look at this and go, okay, I see how the junior officers are taking whatever it is that's being lampooned.
Right.
And so it's a structured way of being irreverent. You could see sort of there's a dichotomy there. So cultures and traditions can be a ton of fun.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate that with the companies that I go in to work with. There's some that are really fun, and there's some that you learn a lot about an organization based on their traditions. Absolutely, and their customs. What about, I'm curious, tell me about how the economic system comes into play as far as culture. You mentioned that as one, and I think that's huge, especially for our listeners, whether in leadership or in sales, with businesses.
Well, again, so culture, as I've said, and will probably say several more times in this podcast, are a reflection of our values. I worked briefly for this company out of Chicago. They will remain nameless. They were a small business consultancy. So what they would purport to do is go into small businesses, help them be more efficient and more profitable. That was their value proposition. And my job was a senior business analyst, and was to go in, analyze within 2 days. Actually, I had basically 24 hours, a little less than that, to analyze the company and determine where they were losing money, and do a report to the management to show them where they were leaving profits on the table. My real job was to sell them on our consulting business to come in and fix the problems I uncovered. Here's where economic system comes into play. A salesman, I was not a salesman. I just told you my real job was to sell something, but I was not presented as a salesperson. I was presented as a business analyst. The salesman would sell them on my analysis. So salesman would come in and say, hey, for only, and the number varied. The business owner didn't know this, but the salesman didn't really care how much he sold my services for. The idea here was if they paid any money for me, they put value on my report.
Of course.
So it was nominally like $1,800. Come in, and I would look at their financials, interview their people, look at their operations, and I could legitimately, in a very short period of time, pinpoint how much they were losing, where they were losing it, what the opportunity costs were for them. Then I would ask them if they were looking for assistance and if they could fix it themselves, they needed help. And if they needed help, I would propose a consulting gig. Everybody in our organization, from the inside salesperson who initially made contact, who got the outside salesperson to come in and meet with them, who got me to come in and do the analysis, who hopefully got the business consultants to come in and do the actual consultants, every single one of us got paid a percent of the hourly compensation. So we are compensated based on how much work was done. That was our economic system. What value did that reflect? No, what would you infer was our company value?
Well, you offer something for a very reasonable price, if anything, you said, with the hope of then being the doctor going in and finding out all the challenges and getting a high consultant rate and then divvying that up among the people.
And so what is the incentive for the consultants to do based on that model?
Find a lot of problems.
And keep that consultancy
Forever.
forever. It's everybody's best interest to do that. And in fact, the amount the consultants got paid was predicated on how many hours they actually did. So we would sell, say, 100 hours of consulting. That was not a the customer could say at any time, we're done, right? They weren't obligated for 100 hours. They're obligated to whatever they thought what the value was. But if whatever we sold, if they went over that, they actually got bonused, the consultants, above that. So every one of us were incented to keep going. And so that was problematic because it wasn't in the client's best interest.
Right.
It was in our best interest. Okay. So it was an economic system that was based upon our values of selling as much as possible, not doing what's right by the customer, right? That wasn't the value.
Right.
The corporate value. So economic system becomes a reflection of our values. Do we compensate people based on longevity? Do we compensate people based on production or merit? Right.
Yep.
So that's an economic system.
Absolutely. Well, when I was in higher ed, it was a straight across the board raise. You got a percentage, 3%, 6%, whatever that was. But it really wasn't based on merit, which changes behavior for some people.
Sure. Especially when tenure's involved.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. A lot of behavior changes. Absolutely.
Right.
Or it doesn't change.
Well, it changes until you get tenure.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. And it doesn't change. Yes.
Right. It may change right after tenure.
That's true.
And but then it never changes again because you're protected, right? And that's one of the problems with tenured systems is it doesn't reward. I mean, what does it value? Now, conceptually, tenure system exists so that professors are protected.
Yep.
So they can have academic intellectual freedom. But the reality is, anymore, that gets abused.
You know, it's funny you were talking about that consulting gig, that company you work with. I was part of a company and I was brought in and I worked with them for 2 hours a week every week for 50 weeks. And their value was, we want to grow as much as possible. So I took them from 20-something million to 50-something million in 1 year. And you know what my reward was at the party that they had, the tradition that they had to celebrate the accomplishments at the owner's home, beautiful catered event, pool party, whole deal. I was given the opportunity to leave that gig. Thank you so much. We've done so well. Yes, we paid you X amount of dollars, which is nothing compared to the 20-something million or 50-something million you did. So I wish I knew that culture up front that if you work so well, you're going to be out of a job. And that's what happened to me.
So as leaders, it's our job to create a culture that reflects our true values, because then it becomes more comfortable for people to work there.
Absolutely.
And or let me rephrase that, because not everybody will be comfortable in that culture. But if you hire people who also share those values, and I think we talked about that in a different podcast, mm-hmm. if you hire people who share those values and the culture reflects those values, then the people you want to work there are comfortable, whereas the people who you don't are not. And of course, if people, as I mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, if there's congruency between the culture and the stated values, then there's built-in trust. And we all know that real persuasion comes with trust. I know I shared the story of Carlos, the guy who worked for me at the moving company, when I tried to change his compensation plan. Didn't want to do it. But a year later, after knowing me for a year, he agreed to do that. And, you know, I actually spoke with him just yesterday and, you know, he's doing fantastic. His company now has grown over 50% in their third year over the year before, you know, and they're just doing amazing. And that's where the trust comes in. And these are the sort of things, by the way, in my Command College boot camp that we go through. Right, that's the 3-day training program I was telling you about.
Oh yeah, please.
Yeah, so we go through in depth how to create culture, how to first understand your values. It's really a transformational experience for people, so they understand how they can be true leaders and create self-directed teams. And culture is one element of that in creating that culture.
Wow. And so, if I knew someone that I think would be good for that program, what would you recommend I do?
Yeah, just contact me. Get on to lockedonleadership.com and just contact me and we'll just have a conversation, because I want to make sure anybody who attends that it's right for them, that it's not, you have to be at a certain place and ready for it. And right. if you are, we'd love to have you. And if not, you know, love to have that conversation just to see where you are and make sure that it's a good fit.
So lockedonleadership.com is what you said, right?
Yes, lockedonleadership.com.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That sounds great. I'm going to share that with some people that I know that I think might benefit greatly from it.
No, I appreciate that. So what else can I answer? What other questions can I answer for you about culture?
So let's pretend there are people sitting around the break room, if people still have breaks when they're working or what have you. And if someone said, what's the best way that we could either figure out our culture within the organization or change our culture? What might you recommend from a 30,000 foot view?
First is you have to define your values. If you do not truly know what your values are, and let me be clear here, this is not what I want my values to be. These are what my company values are. Well, even that's a bit misleading because as an individual, we actually can choose our values. So your values are what you want them to be. That's not an intrinsic thing. Values are a choice we make. We have to understand, though, when we choose our values, that we have to then uphold them. We have to have integrity. In other words, we need to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. We have to embody those values. But if we've done that and we understand our values, that's step one for creating a culture. Then go through the seven elements and ask yourself,
Great.
are they reflective, right? So does my social organization reflect the culture I want, right? If I want a hierarchical culture, right? Little things like, do I allow people to address me by first name? Right. I remember companies where, you know, there's Mr. Rosenberg, Mr. Cecil, was never Darren or Dave, right? That's not my companies that I've ever worked with or for, but there's nothing wrong with that
Right.
if that's your culture. Language is a huge one. Go through, we talked about jargon in a podcast, right? We talked about using jargon as a way of putting people off and creating connection, but it also is a reflection of what's important. The moving company, we never move stuff. We never move junk. We never move crap. We move people's possessions. Look at those things like that, right? And take the time. It's so worthwhile to do that. Again, religion, understand why you're in business. Again, outside yourself, not to make money, not so my kid can go to college or my son can play hockey 5 times a week because I got to afford that. Why are you doing this for other people? What is the value you bring to the world? I guess is a great way to look at that. And really narrow and hone in that. Then make sure your environment reflects those things. I talk about the moving company, but I mean, we've all been to, or maybe not all of us, but many of us, if you go to a creative company, or a design company, graphic designer or architect, right? They're generally big, open, airy, light spaces. People get to interact. They're open, right? Because they need to get the creative juices flowing, right? Not little cubicles like an engineering firm might be. Right. So again, form a government. What's your structure like? Back to the moving company, we were a bottom up, right? We empowered people. The new owners, when it was sold, they were top down. They lost all the people that were great, in my opinion, were great, that made the company what it was, the reason they bought it. They lost in 6 months because their culture changed dramatically, because their form of government changed. Again, we've talked about economic system and then customs and traditions, which, by the way, let your people help do that, right? You don't really want to dictate that. A lot of that stuff forms on its own naturally, right? But embrace it. So go through those steps, I think, and you will find that you will enjoy going to work more. Your people will enjoy going to work more. You'll attract more of the right people. One more quick story on culture, and this is centered around the art and literature aspect, but it reflects when I was doing the consulting I mentioned a while ago, a company out of Chicago. One of the places I went to was a plumbing company in Fort Morgan, Colorado, which is about an hour outside of Denver. And the owner's complaint was that the reason he was struggling was he can't get good plumbers because all the good plumbers wanted to work in Denver because they got paid more. And I remember I looked at him, I said, you think that people want to drive an hour one way, 2 hours commute, because they're going to get paid more in Denver. He said, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what are you looking for in a plumber? He said, well, I'm looking for somebody who's meticulous and neat and, you know, really conscientious about the work they do. And I think I was at this point, I said, well, let me take a look at your financials. Let me do my analysis. And I'm, of course, giving you the short Reader's Digest version. And we'll come back and we'll look at everything. And so he went over to what I thought was a credenza, piled high with books and papers. Just, it was a mess. Turned out it was his desk. And he's like, you can just picture like papers flying in the air as he's looking for the financials that he had printed out ahead of time because he was getting ready for the meeting. And he handed it to me. And it occurred to me right then and there, any plumber that he interviewed who met the criteria he laid out for me, meticulous, clean, et cetera, right,
No.
obsessive, right, not a good fit, going to look around that office and go, I ain't working here. And so they all wanted to work in Denver.
Right.
So.
That's a brilliant story. Absolutely. And I think if everyone just heard that story, talking about values, that just says it right there. It's not what I want to be or what I'm trying to attract. That's what I am. That's what I attract.
Absolutely. And I think in sales, and I think we probably want to wrap this up quickly because I know, but in sales, understanding that culture, you can then address people on their terms, right? Use their languages, understand their social organization, right? Understand if it's formal, it's not Bob unless invited, right? Do things like ask people, you know, how would you prefer to be addressed? Oh, call me Mr. Rosenberg. Okay, Mr. Rosenberg. Oh, please call me Dave. Okay. Understand these things and make sure you're matching your style to theirs.
What a brilliant conversation today, Dave, on culture. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're a great interviewer. Great questions, Darren. So,
Right. Until next time, my friend.
all right, take care.
That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name's Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at lockedonleadership.com or darrencecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.